This is Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
You need to incorporate a business, make a will, file a trademark. You need it fast, but you don't want to spend thousands of dollars. So where do you go? Consider first that over 1 million customers have made LegalZoom.com the leader in online legal documents. But what about quality? The Wall Street Journal tested LegalZoom.com for a last will and testament. They had it reviewed by a law school professor who declared it airtight. And LegalZoom is easy to use. Simply go online, answer a few questions. It takes just minutes. For incorporations and LLCs, LegalZoom even files your documents with the state and helps you obtain your federal tax ID. LegalZoom isn't a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction, which is why Fortune Online magazine called LegalZoom blessedly simple. And for even more savings on most products, enter Brilliant in the referral box at checkout for all your common legal document needs at a surprisingly low price. Visit LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Now more on the jobs front and the tough times at the mall. Fox Business Network's Tom Sullivan is here live with reports on that and Wall Street. Tom?
Dave, the jobs picture is not pretty. The number of people continuing to receive benefits jumped to the highest level in 26 years, even though the weekly claims were not as bad as expected, primarily because of seasonal factors. Adding to the job losses, Macy's, it's also closing 11 stores. Meantime, sales from retailers show December was the worst holiday season in four decades, and Sears, which also operates Kmart and Limited, posted steep declines. Walmart up, but only by a small gain. And Microsoft releasing a trial version of Windows 7, a follow-up to what many consider the disappointing Vista operating system. Big losses on Wall Street after yesterday's skid. The Dow down 105. The NASDAQ is down 12. Dave?
Tom, the price of oil down a little more today after yesterday's 12% plunge on $42 a barrel. More than 2 months after we voted, Barack Obama's election will finally be certified, as is custom, today in Washington.
The people have spoken, but it's the Electoral College that actually elects the president. Those results are in, and today a joint session of Congress meets to certify them. Congress going individually through the electors' votes from each state in the District of Columbia. It will likely go much more smoothly than the last two times. In 2001, dozens of Democrats marched out protesting the Florida vote. A smaller protest over Ohio's vote delayed the certification in 2005. On Capitol Hill, Mike Makowicz, Fox News Radio.
College football will crown a champion tonight, though undefeated Utah might disagree. The BCS national title game pits Florida against Oklahoma.
It's hard to simulate in practice, but I mean, I think it's something that you get ready because every team has an extra gear. It's going to be faster on game day than it is during practice.
Oklahoma QB Sam Bradford hoping to add a title to his Heisman Trophy. Florida's going for its second championship in 3 years. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
You're listening to 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
As the updated weather forecast, Westchester County and vicinity on this 8th day of January. This is the time of year that the weather gets very active. You also see many outbreaks of very cold air. Moves on down into the region. I've seen over the last 30 years the type of weather trend this time of year, from about the 20th of December right up until late January, early February. Some of the strongest storms, some of the heaviest outbreaks of very cold air, and some wild, wintry, icy conditions. It looks like we might start getting into at least a colder-than-normal weather pattern for next week, preceded by a little storm that could give us some snow on this Saturday. In the meantime, for today, we've got mostly cloudy conditions, the possibility of a few snow flurries, breezy in the upper 30s, mostly cloudy this evening, partly cloudy overnight, 20 to 25. Sunny and brisk on Friday. Friday's highs in the mid-30s. Friday night, increasing clouds down into the lower 20s. A chance of snow with some accumulation on Saturday. Saturday's highs, lower 30s. And Sunday's outlook back to partial sunshine, upper 20s. It'll be partly sunny, windy, and cold Monday through Wednesday of next week. Each day are highest, generally near 30. Nighttime lows back into the teens and single digits. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases.
This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Cheryl and Barry Schwartz, Jim Masano, Glen Island Park, and the Soundshore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Every day, for you and yours, 1460 WVOX.
Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents Environmentally Sound with environmental activist Bob Lebensold. Join Bob and his guests as they talk about protecting our most precious resource, the environment. Now, here's Bob Lebensold.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, January 8th, 2008, the 19th day of winter. We have gained, yes, we have gained 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 8 minutes since last we met 4 weeks ago. Yes, it has turned around. We have hit the winter solstice. Days are steadily lengthening now and will continue to do so until the first day of summer. That would be the summer solstice, which is on June 21st this year, and that will also be Father's Day. The sun rose at 7:20 this morning. It will set at 4:45 this evening. That's Eastern Standard Time. We will have 9 hours and 25 minutes of daylight today and even more tomorrow. Hallelujah. The moon will rise at 1:52 this afternoon. It will set at 6:02 tomorrow morning. We are midway between first quarter and full phase. We will reach full phase on January 11th. Next high tides in New Rochelle, 8:34 p.m. In Yonkers, 6:48 p.m. and in Dobbs Ferry at 7:16 p.m. Now our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. The most recent report of American deaths in Iraq, 4,221, 627 more in Afghanistan, which my quick math will tell us is 4,848. In the two countries combined. The best estimate of wounded in action in both countries is 33,561, not to mention all of the mental anguish caused by the wars and these people themselves, these soldiers themselves, and in their families. That's just American casualties. There are other coalition casualties and, of course, many Iraqis and Afghanis. Marine Lance Corporal Chadwick A. Gilliam, age 29, of Macon, Kentucky, died in Kuwait on January 3rd, just a few days ago. PFC Christopher W. Lauder, age 20, from the Army, Chester Heights, Pennsylvania. He was shot in Tikrit, Iraq, on New Year's Eve. Also on New Year's Eve, Private Benjamin B. Tollefson, age 22, Special Troops Division. He's from Concord, California. His unit was attacked in Gazalia on New Year's Eve, as I said. Specialist Tony J. Gonzalez, age 20, 1st Armored Division, Newman, California, a roadside bomb in Seder City, died on December 28th. Major John P. Pryor, age 42, 1st Medical Detachment, Forward Surgical Team, from Morristown, New Jersey. A mortar round blew up near his quarters in Mosul on Christmas Day. I guess he's a doctor. He's a major, so that would imply that he's, and he's with a medical detachment. That would imply that he is a doctor. And He was with the forward surgical team, so it's not just the foot soldiers that get it. The following three soldiers died of injuries sustained during a vehicle rollover in southern Iraq on Christmas Eve. Specialist Stephen M. Okray, age 21, St. Clair Shores, Michigan. Staff Sergeant Christopher G. Smith, age 28, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And Specialist Stephen G. Zapasnik, age 19, of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. All three were from the 3rd Battalion, 16th Field Artillery, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division. All of these American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, now, on the cusp of a new administration, I simply must make use of this portal to make my feelings known. Those of you who have listened to this program know I have been critical of the Bush administration and assume, rightfully, that I am relieved and ecstatic that my country will return to the mission with which we were charged, lo, those 232 and a half, almost to the day, years ago. I would be remiss if I did not express myself more clearly than that, though. Responsible journalists remain objective in their reportage and editorialize from time to time, but open-mindedly, accepting that no one has the wisdom to be right all the time, and on any given occasion, one may be wrong. Do I know how to handle international affairs? No. Ideas, yes, but no answers. Do I know how to handle complex domestic affairs? No. Ideas, yes, but no answers. But let me throw some things out to you. Were I in authority, I would not condone torture. I would not allow my fellow Americans to suffer in New Orleans without aid or hope for aid. I would not throw science out the window for the sake of my campaign contributors and to the detriment of my country. I would not side with the likes of Ken Lay, CEO of Enron, when he stole gazillions of dollars from his employees and ruined them financially, destroying their retirement funds in the process. I would not toss out properly gathered and correct information assuring me that Iraq was not a threat and put the lives of my military men and women on the line to satisfy my own bloodthirst based on some sense that my position made me right no matter what others said. I would not delist endangered and threatened species, make it easier for power plants to pollute, issue executive orders and regulations to weaken air and water pollution controls. I would surely not allow miners and drillers and timbermen to destroy our forests and other lands. BBC is hosting a debate in January addressing the resolution that Bush is the worst president of the past 50 years, and some people claim that Bush is not as dumb as he seems. Well, easy to resolve. Yes and yes. He is the worst and he is as dumb as he seems. But why stop there? I had a discussion with a student of American presidents, and on the question of whether or not Bush is the worst of all time, he cited various other presidents whom he thought were as bad or worse. Personally, I can't fathom that, but does it really matter? Bush has been below 30% approval ratings for some time, dipping much closer to 25% most of the time in most of the polls. Die-hard Rush Limbaugh ditto heads make up most of that. They're about 20% of the population last time I checked. I don't know if that's changed, but if Limbaugh fans are 20% and the president's between 25 and 30%, what does that say? I have a couple of friends who also believe he had it right, but I forgive them because friendship trumps ideology. We agree to differ. I don't think we should dismiss such a destructive man and his complicit cronies with dignity befitting the office. I would like to see him tarred, feathered, and run out of town on a rail. So that is the bad side of this editorial. Now for the good side. I believe that Barack Obama is smart and decent, to cite only two qualities lacking by our soon-to-be former president. I believe things will turn around under President Obama. I believe people will regain confidence and start spending money. I believe our wars will focus on bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and real terrorists and leave non-threatening countries alone. I believe domestic disasters like Hurricane Katrina will be dealt with expeditiously. I believe that terrorists will do their best to neuter him because there is great hope in the Arab world that peace can be found and they don't want peace. I am proud of my country for electing a man of color to the presidency, and I am confident that Barack Obama is the right man in the right place at the right time. If you wish to comment on these remarks or listen to them again, please visit my website, www.environmentallysound.org. Agree or disagree, you may email me from there. Okay. My first guest is Peter Timko. He's well-versed in Arab-American affairs. He has served at the U.S. embassies in Kuwait and Baghdad. He has taught at the University of Maryland. Welcome, Peter Timko.
Thank you, Bob.
So are you speaking to us from Washington today, Peter?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, let's get right into what's going on. The reason I even reached out to reach someone who represents Arab interests is because of the terrible tragedy that's going on in Gaza right now, and, of course, has been going on for so long in various forms. Is there a solution, and if so, what form would it take?
Well, you started with, of course, the most difficult question.
Is there a solution?
Is there a solution? Ultimately, we've known what the solution has to be for the last, 15 years. The problem is right now there is an immediate short-term crisis regarding the population in Gaza. It was not a good humanitarian situation prior to the beginning of the assault, and since the assault has begun, the statistics are just awful. I mean, there are over 500,000 people entirely cut off from running water. The sewage treatment plants are putting sewage directly into the street because there's no power for them. Food and medicine are extremely scarce. This is a population that it's hard to understand how they would not be further radicalized by this action.
So that would actually invite such diseases as typhoid and cholera, actually, if the sewage is being dumped straight in the streets, wouldn't it?
That's a concern. It's also being dumped straight into the ocean, where the sewage treatment plants are near the ocean, or the Mediterranean Sea, rather, which, of course, is not something we want to see either. It's almost, in terms of the solution, ultimately, yes. I mean, a two-state solution based on, territory for peace. Everybody's known what the basic solution has to be for since the Oslo Accords in the early 90s.
And that would be a two-state solution?
It would be a two-state solution with recognition and security for Israel and a viable contiguous state for the Palestinians.
Now, that seems logical and very apt. And I was speaking to a friend of mine who was a student of history. And he says that it doesn't look like two states could work for some reason. And he suggests a three-state solution. And let me just say that what that is and see what your take on that is. He says, I have a note here. Give me a second, please, Peter.
Sure.
He says that there should be a three-state option, and those three states being Egypt, Israel, and Jordan. The West Bank would be under Jordanian control, where they would bring their established government and security forces, and the Gaza Strip would be under Egyptian control. The Palestinians would be assimilated. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, this is not a lightweight who's telling me this. This is someone who has looked at it. He says it's like two kids playing. They can't get along, so the parent has to come along and say, all right, you can't make it happen. We'll just tell you what to do. What do you think of that?
Well, it's not something I think that's feasible anymore. I don't know that it was feasible in 1967 if the territories had been immediately returned. I don't know. I really can't see it. The main reason why I disagree with your friend's assessment is a Palestinian identity has been forged, most particularly since 1968. And it is an identity which is quite distinct from that of Jordan or Egypt. And I think that would be recognized not only by the Palestinians, but very much by the Jordanians and the Egyptians.
So how is it that if there is an actual Palestinian presence and a Palestinian spirit, if you will, an ethos, I'm not sure what, but if there is a spiritual presence of Palestinian people, why are they living in what amounts to nothing more than refugee camps? I don't even know how to ask it. Why is there not an established government that is going forward?
In the first place, the immediate problem is the Palestinian population once lived within what was all in 1947 mandatory Palestine, and a great number of them either were driven out and many simply left out of fear and concern, believing that they would eventually be able to go back to their homes. So the populations that you're dealing with in Gaza in particular, it's less so the case in the West Bank, but you also have sizable populations in Jordan and in Lebanon. These people are refugees. One could ask, you know, if the entire state of New Jersey had to evacuate, you know, would New Jerseyans feel like they fit in New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Maryland?
Well, right now they fit in New Jersey because New Jersey has a structure. There are police. There are, you can go to the grocery store. You can flush your toilet. You can turn on your light. Apparently none of that exists in these other territories. Why would somebody cling to... I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't, but I'm trying to understand... are they there out of desperation because there's nowhere to go, or do they choose to be there? Do they really want to be there? Is that home to them?
Well, you have a sense of national consciousness, so you do want to stay on the land. You know, Gaza, the population that exists in Gaza is largely refugees, and we think about refugee camps as, you know, tent cities and whatnot. If you actually look, even at the pictures of the destruction in Gaza, you see large buildings.
Sure.
So. To an extent, they have made an established home there. The problem was during the 1970s, the only recognized authority among the Palestinian people was the PLO, which was regarded by the Israelis and the United States and Western Europe as a terrorist organization.
Right.
So there was a deliberate effort by all parties to undermine the social institutions that the PLO was building, primarily in terms of service delivery, not actual, you know, formal governing institutions. Nonetheless, because of support from the Arab countries and because there is a need for some sort of self-organization, the PLO was able, throughout the 1970s, to build up a substantial infrastructure of service delivery within the West Bank and Gaza.
And Hamas does the same thing, don't they?
Well, Hamas does the same thing, and the interesting aspect of this is Israel was initially very encouraging towards the development of Islamic movements, particularly in Gaza, as alternates to the power of the PLO. And in the 1980s, when the PLO institutions were being heavily sanctioned by the Israelis, the Islamist resistance organizations were not so, primarily because it was felt that being religious, they would not develop an extremely strong nationalist identity, which the PLO had done.
All right, well, just to make the best use of our time, let's get into a couple of things that you mentioned in the past. First of all, something about how chemical missiles can destroy Israel as well. And also, what do you think about President Obama? Will he have more success in the region than any of his predecessors?
Well, with regard to the first question...
Yeah, chemical missiles which can destroy Israel.
Well, it came up in the context of discussing the Iranian nuclear threat.
Okay.
And my suggestion was, given the size of Israeli territory, chemical missiles, chemical weapons with missile delivery systems pose the same sort of threat in that... In a confined territory, they can have, you know, as devastating effects, although it would take larger numbers to do so. And since Israel has been living with a chemical threat from Syria, certainly, for the last 20 years plus, from Iraq for many years, it is something I'm not certain as to why Israel feels so very strongly, and it's obviously a sincere feeling, on the part of the Israeli government and Israeli population, that Iran represents a very different sort of threat.
Don't we agree? Do we all agree that Iran actually is a threat?
I think we agree that Iran is a threat. I just don't know the extent to which it is a very different kind of threat than Syria posed in the 1980s or Iraq posed in the 1990s.
Well, because Iran is actually developing nuclear weapons, which are hard to detect, even impossible, in deep underground bunkers, as we've discussed.
Sure.
Iraq was easy to find. Syria apparently is not interested, or so I don't know what their position is. They're not in the news anyway as developing nukes, but Iran certainly is.
Iran certainly is.
And isn't Iran pulling the strings of Hamas and Hezbollah in some ways?
I think pulling the strings implies that they have too much of a level of control over either organization. Hezbollah, there's a much closer link between Hezbollah and Iran than there is between Hamas and Iran.
Okay.
For the simple reason that there's a much broader shared identity between Hezbollah, which is a Shia organization within Lebanon, and Iran, which is a Shia country.
Okay.
What they do share, Iran in 1979 had the only successful Islamic revolution, and we're now in the fourth decade of that experience.
This is Iran.
Yes.
This was when they overthrew the
Shah.
The Shah of Iran, right.
So we've got, we're coming on, you know, in the fourth decade of a, to all appearances, successful Islamic revolution. And in that way, Iran has become a model for Islamist movements, political Islamist movements throughout the region.
Okay, Peter, we have a couple of minutes, and I do want to get this just this broad philosophical question in. Is there reconciliation short of war, and can Israelis and Palestinians stop teaching their children to hate each other as they have for generations? Are we looking into the future and seeing a major holocaust of nuclear war over there, or is there reconciliation possible? And we got about a minute and a half to discuss that.
Well, sure. I mean, I think we've proven the destructive capabilities, which haven't been fully unleashed, but we've got a taste of what can be done. The broader question, the one I'm more interested in, is reconciliation possible? And I think the answer is quite obviously yes. Although there are terrorist attacks, and although there are Israeli attacks upon Palestinian infrastructure as well, the fact remains that there are large numbers of Palestinians and Israelis who do believe in a two-state solution, who are willing to work for a two-state solution. The problem has been on both sides that an Israeli attack becomes justification for Palestinian militants to say the peace process is getting us nowhere. A Palestinian terror attack on Israeli territory or civilians is a justification for the Israeli government to say the peace process is getting us nowhere.
Well, you actually represent more of the Arab interest, correct?
That's been my historical affiliation.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, if you sit in the other chair, I mean, I try to put myself in an Arab seat. Can you put yourself in an Israeli seat? How would you handle this? And we have like 25 seconds for that answer.
Sure. Well, the question I would ask myself is, of course I have to do something if there are missiles raining on my territory with regard to the immediate crisis.
Uh-huh.
The question is, what do I do? And I think we've proven historically, going back to the bombing in World War II, that attacking the civilian infrastructure, trying to drive resistant movements out by force of arms, doesn't work. There's an ideology at work here which is simply fueled by such attacks.
Okay, Peter, I agree with you. I wish we had more time to discuss it, but we don't, unfortunately. We have to take a break. But thank you so much, Peter Timko, for joining us this morning.
It's been my pleasure, Bob, and thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Jefferson City or Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas, Schenectady or Schoharie, New York, or Podunk, Illinois, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live, and we will be right back.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. 30 minutes from now, a major speech on the economy by President-elect Barack Obama.
He will say that while we can't depend on government alone to create jobs or long-term growth, only government can provide the short-term boost to break the vicious cycle of recession, a lack of spending leading to a lost jobs, leading to even less spending, leading to no growth and less credit.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson in Washington, 467,000 new unemployment claims filed last week. A planned three-hour humanitarian halt in the Gaza fighting did not go as planned.
Now the UN, which distributes food and other basic supplies to some 750,000 Gazans, is stopping its work in the Strip, saying its workers face too much of a risk from the Israeli military. It comes after the UN says a truck driver was shot and killed by soldiers as he was trying to deliver aid.
Fox Radio's Pia Chattopadhyay at the border. Fox News, we report, you decide.
The official limousine service of WVOX and WVIP is LimousinesWorldwide.com. LimousinesWorldwide.com is the premier ground transportation leader and features new model business class and executive sedans, SUVs, elegant limousines, and minibuses. LimousinesWorldwide.com specializes in aviation ground transportation and is committed to providing elite chauffeured services while meeting your business transportation needs. LimousinesWorldwide.com is now the only choice of corporate CEOs and business executives who rely on this wonderful company for prompt, on-time service all year long. And LimousinesWorldwide.com is perfect if you're going out for a night on the town, a Broadway show, or any special occasion. Call 1-800-828-8283. 1-800-828-8283. That's 1-800-828-8283 for LimousinesWorldwide.com. The official limousine service of WVOX and WVIP.
Thursday morning forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We've got clouds, the possibility of some snow showers this afternoon. Breezy, too. Temperatures in the upper 30s. Going to be mostly cloudy this evening, partly cloudy overnight down into the lower 20s. Sunny and brisk on Friday. Friday's highs will range into the mid-30s. At night, increasing clouds. Looks like the possibility of some snow overnight in the lower 20s. Now look for Saturday. It looks like snow, and it could be some accumulation, too. Temperatures in the lower 30s on Saturday. Clearing Sunday. I'm Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
1460 WVOX. Now back to celebrating our environment. This is Environmentally Sound with environmental activist Bob Lebensold on 1460 WVOX. Once again, here's Bob Lebensold.
Hi, we are back. Just a couple of things I'd like to get in before we... Before we get to my next guest, I'd like to remind you about this book I've been talking about. It's called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You. This is the 2008 version. This is updated. It's got many more pages. It's Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You by Louise Lane. It documents 48 cases of medical malpractice and mishaps. And now we've all heard of the special cases where the wrong organ was removed or incorrect medication was given. But those are extraordinary and unusual. This book tells you of much more common issues, diagnostic tests you should avoid, ways in which doctors and hospitals can put you at risk and can compromise your general health. My own experience, I had regular eye exams. And I was uncomfortable with the way they pushed my eyes around. I saw no reason to accept that. And so now, I thought the doctors knew what they were doing, so I allowed it. After I read this book, I stopped going for those routine tests, and if I have eye exams in the future, I will be much more assertive about telling the doctor how not to treat my eyes. There's much more in this book. That's just one example. The book is called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You by Louise Lane. It is available through Amazon.com and other online booksellers. Again, Appointment with Danger by Louise Lane. And just a word about my good friends at the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. Learning Shop is a full-service tutoring company. It provides homebound services for upwards of 20 Westchester County school districts, including Bronxville, Rye, Edgemont, Chappaqua, and New Rochelle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In addition, they provide private tutoring in all academic areas and for any number of standardized tests, GEDs, SATs, whatever you need. They've been running an after-school resource room program for many years, My copy says over 7 years, and this copy's old, so it's probably nine by now. They've had numerous successes with college-bound students as well as remedial instruction. There's always coffee and tea and bagels and cream cheese, whatever there is, cookies for all visitors. It's the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. They're at 914-735. Oh my goodness, I don't have the number right here. I'm gonna look that up in a bit, and I will give it to you. But in any case, it's the Learning Shop. I'm sorry, here it is, 835-1070. That's 914-835-1070, the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York. Good people and very good educators, and I recommend them highly. One thing I did not get to when I was giving my editorial about the president. I was sitting with some fellows at my cigar lounge in Manhattan, and we were puffing up some cigars. This big black guy sits down next to me and introduced himself as Big Ray. And at first we listened, we hadn't met before, and blah, 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 people talking. finally, I got to talk to him, and I just turned and I said, well, what do you think about Barack Obama as president-elect? He says, I didn't vote for him. And I'm looking at this guy and said, what possible reason could you have, being a black American, for not voting for him? Now, mind you, Ray is a black American. He is not from the islands. He's not Jamaican. He's not Bajan. He's not from Saba or St. Thomas. He is born and raised in America. One side of his family, I believe he said his father goes back to slavery in this country. His mother has some European background. In any case, he says, first of all, Barack was born from privilege and he's not really as black. And I couldn't buy that. It just didn't ring true because still he's a man of color and it's a tremendous step. So finally he said, and this is, I think is his real reason, he did not want the first black president to have to deal with the mess that he will be inheriting. And for that reason, he voted for John McCain because he just did not want to stick a black man into that soup that is being left. Okay, Big Ray. Okay, my next guest is Audrey Penn. She's the author of over 15 children's books. She's a former ballerina with the New York City Ballet and several other prestigious companies here and abroad. She was a choreographer for the American Olympics teams. Speaking to us from Maryland, welcome Audrey Penn.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Audrey. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Where are you in Maryland?
I'm in Olney, which is about 20 miles north of Washington.
Did you say Olney, O-L-N-E-Y?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And about the same distance south of Baltimore. So
you're right between Baltimore and Washington?
Yeah, right. Back in the middle.
Were you a fan of the TV series The Wire?
You know what? I didn't see it. I didn't watch it. Baltimore, I know.
It's Baltimore, and it's one of the best, most realistic, historically accurate, I'm sure, series I've ever seen on any network.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ran for, I think, 3 years or 4 years. And
yeah.
Just fabulous. How's your weather down there in Olney, Maryland?
Great. I just want to see a peak of sun. I want to see, a sucker hole. Just a round little spot where the sun comes through.
You want to see it or you're looking at it?
I'm wanting to see it.
So it's overcast, in other words.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on that as well as other things in this interview. First of all, I prefer overcast to direct sunlight. That's just me. Maybe I'm a bat, but direct sunlight hurts my eyes and it makes me uncomfortable. Generally,
yeah.
I suppose once every 4 or 5 years, I enjoy laying on the beach for an hour and feel that heat.
Yeah.
But for the most part, not. How many books have you written? I said about 15, but I think I'm wrong, right?
I've probably written about 50, but
50?
Several of them are in the basement in a drawer because they're so bad that they're not worth editing and sending out.
Well, if you write children's books, in fairness, and so the audience understands, children's books don't have a lot of text. You can read one in 15 minutes. It's really about how it is read to them and how they read it and the pictures as much as the text. If you just printed it, it wouldn't take very many pages at all.
Actually, the way that it's done and the reason it's so expensive is the printing process, everything is done in eighths. Like if you take The Kissing Hand, one sheet of paper has eight pages on the front and eight pages on the back. And when they fold it and then they put it between the cover, they have two of those so that you have 16 and 16. And so you have a 32-page book. And if you go into the children's, like, 5-year-old, you'll see that most of the books are in color and most of them are 32 pages. When they do it outside of the eights, that's when you get extra pieces of paper, that nothing is on. But writing children's books is very, very, very difficult. It's a lot harder. Like, I'm having a blast when I write for the older children. When I write for fifth grade and up so that the adults can enjoy it too, I can say what I want and I can express myself and I can extend sentences. But with a child's book, you have to weigh and measure every single word.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'll take me weeks to make one sentence out of what I want to say.
I think I can understand that. You're actually completing a quartet of novels, right? And,
right.
And you're already receiving emails asking about the fifth in the series?
Right. And now when I speak at school, they get so excited about when I tell them about the first book in particular and how it was written, they raise their hand and they go, well, what's the fifth one? And I said, nobody said anything about a fifth one. And I'm getting emails, suggestions, what the fifth one should be.
So would your publisher go along with the fifth one?
Yeah, she said, why not?
Okay.
But I have other projects that I really want to get to. But, the kids are right. I mean, they have a list. And I also have a contest going on. I give the kids a riddle, and then I give them a pencil. And the pencil says, valued above rubies. And I say to them, go to my website if you think you know what I'm talking about.
What was this now? Lubies what?
Valued above a segment.
Yeah.
Is valued above rubies. And a pencil, I had to use something to be a segment, so I chose pencil. And not sharpened.
How can children...
And it says valued above rubies, and this represents a segment. And a segment is the greatest gift you've ever received.
A segment.
So if you can tell me what I'm talking about, you will get the fourth book free.
Well, I can't tell you what you're talking about. How's a fifth grader going to tell you that?
Actually, some of them have done very well.
Oh, now I'm really embarrassed. It's like that TV show. Do you know more than a second grader?
But I can't tell you because if somebody's listening.
I have to go to your website, audreypenn.com, right? That's Audrey Penn, P-E-N-N,
dot com.
I've been there. It's an interesting site. Have you ever thought of writing other things, like perhaps for older readers? Older teenagers or adults?
Well, this is for teenagers. But no, I don't want to get into adult writing. There's so much. I was listening to this other book you were talking about, and here I sit, very handicapped and very ill, and you're scaring me to death. So there's so much out there that is negative.
Yeah.
I'd rather just climb into the computer with my kids and my make-believe friends who have become very real.
I can understand. Well, actually, just to remark on that book a little, I didn't elaborate much, but Louise Lane actually lost her sight, and she blames the doctors for aggressive testing. Of course, the doctors would probably say that there was a condition there. But this book is full of interesting...
I'm sure I could add to it.
Some of them are very true, and you could probably... Yeah, so the message is simply to be assertive as far as your own medical care and health care goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so while we're plugging it, it's Appointment with Danger. Medical Care Can Kill You by Louise Lane. That's just that.
You have to be your own best advocate.
You do,
and
absolutely.
Especially for your children
And in every way, not just medical, but in
in
your relationships and in the way you live your life, sure. I want to take a little issue with you here. I hope you don't mind. One of your books is Chester Raccoon and the Big Bad Bully. I think it's the third Chester Raccoon.
Fourth one, I think. It's the fourth.
The fourth, The Kissing Hand and a couple of others.
Yeah.
And this addresses the issue of being bullied in school.
Right.
I'd like to talk about that for a minute. But first, I think it was a very charming story that you told about how you came upon a raccoon as being your hero or your protagonist. You were once in the woods.
Yeah.
And
had
you seen the child abuse first before you went into the woods?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I was parking the car.
Yeah, tell us that.
I was taking my son to Wheaton Regional Park, which is near us, and it has a little red choo-choo train, and it, takes you on this ride, and I'd been on the ride 100 times with him, and we were parking the car, and a mother was smacking the bare legs of, like, a 3 or 4-year-old and saying, keep up, keep up. And I'm thinking to myself, this poor child has shorter legs than you, and smacking isn't the answer. I mean, are you here for you or are you here for the child? And so I saw this, and I just wish we were allowed to go over, and just punch some of the adults the way that they treat their children.
You mean punch a bully? You mean actually punch a bully?
Oh, God, I'm telling you. So then my son and I got on the train, and in the middle of the train ride, it stopped, so I kind of thought it was broken. But the engineer kept going, come on, get away, get away, get away. So I figured there was a deer on the railroad track, and he said to everybody, stay in the train, don't move. I have to go get a park ranger. I'm not allowed to touch these animals. And obviously this animal is here to stay. So as soon as he left, I looked at my son. I said, stay in the train. But I got out. And I walked forward, and it was the biggest raccoon I'd ever seen in my life. And she had attitude. She looked right at my eyes like, I was here, first lady, what's your problem?
Yep.
And so I backed up, and that's when I saw the cub. And I stood there for a minute, and the mother took the cub's hand, tiny little hand, and opened it up and put her face in that tiny little hand, just nuzzled it.
Huh.
And then the baby put his hand on his cheek.
Huh.
And I just thought to myself, here in the woods, this raccoon does not read books like, you know, How to Raise Your Child, all right? It was just so beautiful and loving and from the heart and this tenderness. And I had just seen this human mother, this beast in the parking lot. But when I asked the park ranger later what the mother was doing, she said they do that. They put their scent in the baby's paw. So if she has to leave for a moment to get food or something, he can put his hand on his cheek, smell his mom, and he's not scared.
So
when my daughter was getting ready for kindergarten, she didn't want to go. And I said, let's do what the raccoon did. And I put a kiss in her hand. And I said, when you need it, put it on your face. And when I picked her up
How
at
sweet.
Kindergarten,
How sweet.
Her teacher said her hand was on her face all 4 hours.
Tell me, how did the park ranger resolve the situation?
He just came and scooted them off.
The train guy couldn't have done that?
No, not allowed.
Not allowed, yeah.
Allowed. And it's a good lesson for kids.
Like the union.
Don't touch wild animals.
Like unions. You can't pick up a mop if you're a sweeper, right?
Or, you know, hold your hand out with a peanut and feed a bear, yeah.
Oh, now you're getting into my criminal activities. By the way, it has just started snowing here since we're a natural world program. It is coming down lightly. Lightly isn't good enough. I just got a wonderful pair of snowshoes for a gift over the holidays, and I'm looking to use them. Usually I don't like a lot of snow because driving is a nuisance, but now I'm looking for some good snow so I can get out there with these wonderful L.L. Bean red snowshoes, which I adore.
Oh, wow.
Let's go back a little bit to your former life as a ballerina. You were with the New York City Ballet.
Yeah, but I try to stay away from that topic,
really?
And I apologize for that, but I didn't stop because I wanted to. I had the rug pulled out from under my feet.
I understand you.
And
had,
I was very young.
We
had lied to everyone because if a company knew how sick I was, they would never have allowed me to sign contracts. And so there's a lot of mis and wrong information out there to cover my tracks.
Okay. All right. So if you'd prefer to avoid that. But I do know, now I have reviewed New York City Ballet, and this is quite a company. So if you were with them at all, that makes you quite a dancer. Okay.
I really loved it, and it was sensual, and it was beautiful, and it was the only thing I had ever wanted. And now, even when I hear the music, whatever joint or body part that's working that day,
you dance.
I just do something, you know.
That's terrific. That's very touching. And apparently you've dealt very, very well with adversity. Let's get into Chester Raccoon and the Big Bad Bully. You've just said something that you've just kind of stuck your foot in the place where I was going to go. In this book, which I recommend to people, it's beautifully illustrated. It's very sensitively written by Audrey Penn. Again, Chester Raccoon and the Big Bad Bully. And Audrey Penn is at Audrey Penn.com. That's P-E-N-N. in this, you're so idealistic. I just can't stand it. It's like I was drinking molasses while I was reading this book. There's a bully in school in the form of a badger, and finally the raccoons and all the other animals present a unified front because bullies prefer to split one off, because you can bully one a lot easier than you can bully two, and certainly a lot easier than a group. And they all confront the bully, and he's kind of scared because he thinks he's going to get his comeuppance. And then you just say, would you like to play with us and all that? And everybody's huggy, kissy, sweet, and nice, right? Well, sometimes a bully needs to get his ass whooped.
You should excuse the vernacular.
And you just said that about that lady who was slapping on her. So what do you say about that now?
I would love, if I saw a bully, I would love to take him and take him by the shirt and slam him into a wall. But when you're talking to 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 year olds, all you have time for is one suggestion. You know, this suggestion may not even work except 1 in 100 times.
Uh-huh.
But I had to address the subject, and I had to come up with an ending that made children less afraid. The first thing I did, though, is tell an adult. Children tell Mrs. Raccoon. So they go to an adult and they say, we have a bully problem.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I tell the kids. You know, the first thing you need to do is you need to tell a grown-up. And then, you know, if there's none around, start using your voice and say, someone's being bullied.
Okay.
And, you know, try to collect people, but don't ever approach a bully on your own.
So your next book is going to be How to Whoop This Bully's Butt, right?
Oh, I wish.
You could write that. Would your publisher publish it?
No. No.
That's
and
the trouble
Barnes & Noble
books.
Would not allow it in the store.
I don't know why. Well, I'll open a store so you can sell that book. I think
no,
that's right.
Just a Raccoon. The first book is about separation anxiety. The second one is about siblings. The third one is about moving away and having to start again. And the fourth one is about dealing with a bully. And the next one, we go green.
Okay, excellent. Now, your most recent book, I think is your most recent book, is called The Miracle Jar.
Yeah.
A Hanukkah Story.
Yeah.
That's also, it's very simple and touching. And it tells the story of Hanukkah, which I think most people know about how a single bit of oil lasted for 8 days back in biblical times, and you make that you put your own twist on it with this family, which is very interesting. Also, now can we get you know what I want? So with what's going on in Gaza right now, I know you've been recently to Israel. Is that something that you care to discuss? Anything about?
Well, actually,
what goes on over there and what's going on right now?
My girlfriend and her daughter sent me an email, and it had numbers and percentages about, you know, what they've done and what Israel has done. They said, if you want the real numbers, here they are. And they sent that to me. I just feel that on both sides, the stubbornness is appalling. And when I was over there, I hate to use the word rude with the Hasidim, but I found them to be very, very rude. We were staying in a hotel.
And those of our listeners who don't know, Hasidim are religious Jews who are in various sects.
Right, and these people were living in the hotel because they were taken out of their homes on the Gaza Strip. And when I would get in the elevator or something, these women had, you know, 6 children with them, and one on the way and one in a stroller, and they would come at you with the stroller like you were invisible. And they just, I don't know.
They're aggressive. I the Israelis that I've known, have been much less polite, much more aggressive than the average person, which I suppose is part of their zeitgeist because they're constantly in a state of tension and potentially war. So I guess they want peace so they can be like some of the rest of us, at least, who know how to relax and enjoy life.
Exactly. And it all has to do with, you know, the rock. It all has to do with, you know, this one area where Isaac was supposed to, you know, make a decision about his sons, and where Muhammad was supposed to ascend to heaven, and where Christ was taken and or born, I'm not sure, but we were in the city of David and looking around, and then we went into Old Jerusalem. And, I mean, Israel's wonderful. It was so neat to get on a train. First of all, if you ask two Israelis for directions, you'll get three answers, and they'll all be wrong. So we ended up taking four wrong trains. But to look out the window and not see horses running, but to see camels, I thought that was so neat. And the food is fabulous.
Oh, really?
You're not served at the same time. And, you know, they're on their own clock. They're on their own time. But some of them are absolutely wonderful.
Well, you know, it just seems to me that that you can have a church and a synagogue and a mosque on the same block. I really don't have a problem with that. I think we have that in this country. I don't know why this particular land is so precious to everybody. Audrey, we're running out of time. I'm very happy to have spoken to you again. Audrey Penn has written The Big Chester Raccoon and The Big Bad Bully, The Miracle Jar, and Skatey 8 other books. AudreyPenn.com is her website. Thank you so much, Audrey.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I'd like to thank Peter Timko and Audrey Penn for joining us this morning. It's hard to get a handle on man's inhumanity to man, especially in the Middle East. I am encouraged that an organization whose mission is to serve Arabic people can look at situations and assign responsibility where they belong rather than blame based on partisanship. A certain rabbi in this very station, WVOX, has shown that he is condescending and closed-minded, and that is not the way to find peace. He won't even talk to me, a fellow Jew, because I don't agree with him. It is also nice that there are still some people who can address the basics of life, nurturing and teaching children. Such a good thing that there are authors like Audrey Penn who see the whole picture and make their attempt to make some sense out of it all and to give future generations a fighting chance. Our thought for the week: many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, flagship of Whitney Radio. Howard Sterman is in the building. He is up next with his Hometown Hour. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Levinsohl. This program is Environmentally Sound. If you are listening in Hollywood, Florida, or Hollywood, California, in Coconut Creek, Florida, or Isla Vista, California, or Kanchanaburi, Thailand, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Enjoy the music for the next half minute or so. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.
From New York's Golden Apple, this is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX New Rochelle, and worldwide at WVOX.com.